This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Distrust of the COVID-19 vaccine for some has led to people refusing to use childhood vaccines for any disease. But according to an expert, that goes against the grain for West Virginia history.
West Virginia has one of the strongest immunization policies in the United States.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has sent some residents letters about aid for floods last year. Jack Walker has more.
Last summer, flash floods swept southern and central West Virginia, damaging homes and businesses across multiple counties. On January 30, President Joe Biden officially declared the event a major disaster, opening the region to more than $1 million in federal aid. FEMA has encouraged individuals affected by the flooding to file insurance claims immediately. For residents who have already submitted their applications, letters from FEMA regarding next steps should have already come or soon be on their way. The letters will indicate if residents need to submit supplemental information to complete their claims. For more information on the disaster recovery efforts and how to file a federal aid claim, visit our website at wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
Teaching students science versus theology is the focus of a bill heading toward a final vote. Randy Yowie has more.
Senate Bill 280 allows teachers in public schools to discuss theories of how the universe and or life came to exist. Debate on the proposal focused on science versus theology. In the House Judiciary Committee, the committee counsel said if a student asked, "How did life begin?" answering with intelligent design or creationism could be legally risky. Delegate Andy Shamblin, a Republican from Kanawha County, disagreed.
All this bill does is say that if the subject is brought up, the teacher can discuss that subject.
Those in opposition were concerned the bill supports teaching intelligent design, a concept not included among scientific theories. Senate Bill 280 was sent to the House floor with recommendation that it pass. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Randy Yowie in Charleston.
Community air monitoring has been debated this legislative session. House Bill 5018 would restrict how data from air monitors could be used. But a Senate committee meeting Tuesday was canceled, so the fate of the bill is uncertain. Curtis Tate spoke with Morgan King, the West Virginia regional organizer for the Climate Reality Project, and Delegate Evan Hansen, a Democrat from Monongalia County, to get an update on that and other issues.
Our guests today are Morgan King with Climate Reality and Delegate Evan Hansen of Monongalia County. The first thing I want to say, though, is that we did attempt to invite Republican lawmakers to discuss these issues with us. We did want to hear their perspective. They are, after all, in the majority, but it's getting toward the end of the session and none were available. Just wanted to make that clear. So, Morgan, there was supposed to be a hearing today on House Bill 5018, which affects community air monitoring in the Senate Energy Committee. That did not happen, but you were saying earlier that that should happen tomorrow. Can you tell me a little bit about that bill briefly and where you think it's going?
Yeah, House Bill 5018 is really concerning because it would limit community air monitoring. I've put up several air monitors myself here in the Kanawha Valley trying to like fill the gap that we see in air monitoring in the state. There's only one actually in the entire county of Kanawha County, and it's just nearby here on the east end. So we've increased that number by up to almost a dozen now here in the county. And if this bill passes, we're going to see limitations on how that data can be used to protect our communities and inform with more thorough data and science as to what air we're even breathing.
Oh, well, Delegate Hansen, I know you have some concerns with it as well, and you opposed it. What more would you like to add?
I did speak out against the bill when it was on the House side. This is data that's collected where people live and where people breathe. And it's important that that data can be used potentially in a court of law if there's a lawsuit that's proper or considered by regulatory agencies whose job it is to make sure that the air is clean.
Now, it's my understanding that the US EPA is offering funding to states to expand and enhance community air monitoring. Is that something that would help in this situation?
I think it helps people understand whether the air is safe in their communities. So I welcome that funding to come to West Virginia so we have more data, not less.
Would it actually expand the number of air monitors? I think there's only something like 12 or 13 statewide.
Yes, and those are federally established monitors by the EPA. The monitors that we're putting up are community air monitors that can be placed on people's homes, on people's businesses, and produce data onto a real-time map that you can look at right now on your cell phone. And so that EPA money, should we get it and apply to it, would allow more community air monitors to be put up, ideally in the hundreds. We'd like to see air monitors in a grid across the entire state to actually get representative data of our air.
Okay, well, there will be a hearing tomorrow in Senate Energy, and we'll be following that. The next thing I'd like to talk about is that the State Office of Energy released last week what it calls its Priority Energy Action Plan, and I think Delegate Hanson, you have a copy of it there. It's about 64 pages, roughly speaking. There were a few things that certainly stood out about it to me, but why don't you tell us how you reacted to it?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that we finally have a plan that's looking at greenhouse gas emissions from different parts of the West Virginia economy. It's important to know where we've been and where we are now so that we could try to find ways to reduce emissions in the future. But what I found lacking in the plan was their scenario for the future for how to reduce emissions from West Virginia. The Office of Energy talks about having an all-of-the-above approach, but if you look at their future scenario, it's pretty much all about fossil fuels, even though there's many different types of energy available with no greenhouse gas emissions. So like when I searched the document for the word wind does not show up in this energy plan. The word solar shows up once, and the word battery does not show up at all, despite the fact that wind and solar, renewables plus battery storage, this is what's being used across the country to cost effectively reduce emissions and create jobs.
That was Delegate Evan Hansen and Morgan King speaking with Curtis Tate. To hear the rest of that discussion, visit our website and tune into the legislature today to see our coverage of the last few days of the session. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Rain today with high temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Tonight, a chance of rain, lows in the 40s. Rain early tomorrow with partial clearing, highs in the 50s and 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by the West Virginia State Treasurer's Office with the Smart 529 program, recognizing West Virginia's teachers through the Above and Beyond project. More at wvtreasury.com. Missed a flurry of vaccine legislation. Appalachia Health News reporter Emily Rice spoke with Dr. Susan Flesher, professor and chair of the Department of Pediatrics at Marshall University, for a conversation about vaccination laws in West Virginia.
Why is having a highly vaccinated population important to you as a physician?
It's very important to me because we see and have seen over the years the results of having a strong vaccine policy versus not having a strong vaccine policy. You may be aware there have been many measles outbreaks recently in other states. West Virginia has one of the best, strongest immunization policies in the United States. There are only about five states that have a policy as strong, and one of them is West Virginia.
How would allowing for a religious exemption to vaccination and not requiring students enrolled in private or virtual schools impact West Virginia's immunity?
Well, right now, the only exemptions that West Virginia allows are for medical reasons, and these need to be reviewed and approved. So that narrows it to evidence-based medicine, children that actually medically would not be able to take the vaccine for a medical condition. If the law that is being considered was passed, any parent would be able to request a religious exemption, and so it would actually be easier to get an exemption than it would be to go to the physician's office and get a vaccine, because all you have to do is just request the religious exemption. There does not need to be any review or approval for it. So it would leave the door wide open to children not being immunized.
What have some states faced after allowing these exemptions?
There are states that have had issues with cases, and California is a good example of one, because they have had outbreaks, but they've worked to strengthen their immunization policies, and they have looked at West Virginia as a model.
Could you tell me about what kind of medical conditions keep people from getting vaccinated?
There are certain children that have a weakened immune system, children that have cancer and are receiving chemotherapy, which temporarily weakens their immune system, cannot receive the vaccines during certain periods. Some children are too young to be vaccinated. For instance, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine is not given until 1 year of age. So what happens if you have a well-vaccinated population, you have what we call herd immunity, meaning that even though there might be someone with cancer that's not immunized, they don't have very high risk of getting the disease because most everybody around them is immunized.
Why would an immune-compromised population need those who can get vaccinated to be vaccinated?
It's to protect them kind of secondarily. That's what we call herd immunity, because if you cannot be vaccinated, then you depend on the people around you to be vaccinated so that you're not exposed to the disease.
Could you talk to me about evidence-based medicine and why it's important to pay attention where our information is sourced from?
Now, when we look at any type of public health policy, it should be based upon evidence. It should be based on what we call evidence-based medicine. And in the case of immunizations, there is evidence and data that shows keeping our vulnerable populations healthy depends on maintaining school and childcare immunization policies that allow exemptions only for medical reasons.
That was Appalachia Health News reporter Emily Rice speaking with Dr. Susan Flesher about vaccination laws in West Virginia. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Eric Douglas is our news director, and he produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.